Welcome to TCN Talks. The goal of our podcast is to provide concise and relevant information for busy hospice and palliative care leaders and staff. We understand your busy schedules and believe that brevity signals respect. And now, here's our host, Chris Como.
Hello, and welcome to TCN Talks. Our guest today is Mark Cohen. Mark has been a guest throughout this year. In fact, he's going to just become a staple of the show now. And so, Mark, before we jump into our top news stories for the month of December, this is our first show together in 2024, I stumbled into something I want to be a tradition now. And I just happened to do it the last night of our family dinner together before I launched back into work. And then I started doing it with our team. And I would ask them, hey, what's the highlight of your holiday? You know, we're holidays in the rearview mirror, we're jumping into work again. And I started asking that question, and people's stories were fascinating. So I wanted to give you an opportunity. What was the highlight of your holiday?
Highlight of our holiday is something that we've done frequently in the last decade or so. My wife and I spend a lot of time in Montreal, and we usually go up actually before the Christmas holiday. And for about the last dozen years or so, the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts, which has a small venue performing arts space as part of the museum, they've been presenting a Montreal-based jazz pianist, somebody very much in the tradition of other Montreal jazz pianists from previous generations, Oliver Jones and Oscar Peterson. His name is Tory Butler. He's actually a native of New Jersey. And Tory, for these last dozen years, has been doing an interpretation of Vince Guaraldi's Charlie Brown Christmas album. Tory and a trio, just as Vince Guaraldi recorded it. And it's truly a magical evening. It's a short concert. It's, you know, a 40-minute or so album, 35-minute album. But it's really a highlight of people's holiday, I think, in Montreal. And you see, you know, all generations, you see aging boomers who grew up with the Charlie Brown Christmas, you see them with their grandchildren and great-grandchildren. It's really a fun night. And Tory Butler is an incredible jazz pianist. For anybody out there who loves jazz, he's got two albums out.
That's awesome, Mark. Well, that reminds me, if you ask me, the one of my traditions, I, of course, grew up in South Louisiana, so I read our kids the Cajun Christmas, even though they're all teenagers and into their 20s now. But then actually what I did on the back end of reading the Cajun Christmas on Christmas Eve is I actually played the scene when Linus gets up on the stage in the Charlie Brown Christmas. And kind of that was my way of kind of making Christmas deeper. But then, of course, the Cajun Christmas is a little bit light. So that was kind of a fun thing to do with my family. So when I like literally hear the music in my head when you were describing your highlight. Well, Mark, I want to move your master's class to the end today. So why don't we go first into what were your top 10-ish articles? By the way, what was kind of your sense? Was the volume a little bit higher, slower?
Well, it was a short month. With notable exceptions, the coverage was mostly predictable. In terms of number of clips it ran, you know, it was down because a lot of news sources shut down for a week to 2 weeks at the end of the year. So there's just that much less volume on the radar screen. So, you know, for example, my number one category, as always, was long-term care, assisted living, and senior living. But instead of 70 articles or so like we had in November and October, we had 46 articles in December. M&A news, even though the experts say that M&A has slowed down in 2023, M&A news was in second place with 42 articles. Labor and employment news was third at 41 articles, followed by fundraising and development news with 40 articles, then a little bit of a dip, hospice provider news at 34 articles in hospice news today. Last month, grief and bereavement news, 32. General hospice news, 27 articles. End of life care in eighth place with 26 articles. Hospital news in ninth place with 23 articles. Then a tie for 10th place with 22 articles between physician assisted suicide slash medical aid and dying, and home health and private duty and related news. So no real surprises. The increase in fundraising and grief and bereavement news is something you would certainly expect to see in December, given the activities of a lot of hospice providers. So as I said, as per usual, nursing home assisted living coverage was in the top spot with 46 articles. And again, they were mostly negative. The most significant coverage was a lengthy investigation by the Washington Post that looked at the failures of assisted living providers in nursing homes to prevent their residents with dementia from wandering. The Post conducted a deep data dive using police reports, incident reports, death certificates, and more, and concluded that hundreds of assisted living residents had died in recent years when they wandered from their home. And the Post had some really disturbing security cam footage that they put up online along with their editorial package. Just another massive black eye for assisted living and nursing homes. Despite the negative coverage like that, the nursing home industry continued its pushback against the administration's efforts to impose staffing and other tight standards on it. And we saw probably about a half a dozen articles about that in December, kind of a contraindication to the big story from the Post. As I said, merger and acquisition news saw 42 articles in December, almost surpassing skilled nursing and assisted living. Among the hospice M&A news, the big news in the hospice world was the announcement that Hope Hospice in the East Bay in Northern California was joining the previously announced hookup of By the Bay Health and Mission Hospice and Home Health, also in the San Francisco Bay Area. In the broader post-acute sector, the big news was InnovAge's acquisition of the PACE programs of Concerto Care and National HME's acquisition of Hospice Source. And the month ended with the pretty big news that Brookdale, which, you know, not that many years ago was going to make a huge splash in hospice and home care to keep their residents within their family for all the post-acute care they needed. But Brookdale announced at the end of the month that they were going to sell the 20% share of their home health and hospice business that they kept when they sold the 80% to the hospital provider, HCA. The buyer was not named in that Brookdale announcement. The price was approximately $27 million. Labor and employment news, no surprise, was right behind in third place, and news of union activity simply crushed all other labor news in December. There were home health and hospice nurses at Boston VNA settled on a new contract, while home health and hospice nurses at Berkshire VNA in Western Massachusetts voted to authorize a strike, as did home health and hospice nurses across the continent at Peace Health in Central Oregon. Other than that, the labor news in the hospital sector was more of the same. Nurses drawing a line in the sand, mostly on staffing and working conditions in contract talks, and strikes popping up with a regularity that we just have not seen in decades in the healthcare sector. Fundraising and development news, no surprise, was in fourth place in December with 40 articles in Hospice News Today. Given the upswinging year-end giving that we see this time of year, just not a surprise. We did see a couple of articles about the support that thrift store profits provide for the mission fulfillment activities of not-for-profit providers. That also could be expected because of the emphasis on holiday shopping. And a couple of hospice thrift stores were able to get stories in there that said hospice thrift stores are actually great places to do your holiday shopping. General Hospice Provider News was next with 34 articles in fifth place. Openings and closings, again, provided some of the most significant news for the hospice sector. A small hospital in rural Virginia shut down its home health and hospice operations. A rural hospital system in Minnesota temporarily shuttered its hospice cottage due to staffing, and a county government in eastern Iowa began publicly discussing whether to close its small hospice program because, at least in the words of one county commissioner, there were for-profit providers who offered the same service in the county and that the county should not be competing with the private sector. On the opposite end of the spectrum, a hospital in Arkansas announced a new hospice program. A new hospice house opened in the Hudson Valley in New York, and a couple of refurbished inpatient units reopened in locations across the country, both at for-profit and not-for-profit providers. Grief and Bereavement News was next with 32 articles in December in Hospice News Today. The bulk of the articles obviously dealt with grief at the holidays. A fair number of those articles were columns authored by hospice experts or local television interviews with local hospice experts, grief and bereavement experts. There are also a large number of articles about tree lighting, luminary, and other winter memorial events held for communities served by their local hospices. General Hospice News was next with 27 articles. It was a light month for that type of coverage. The most talked about coverage was the ongoing progress of the merger between NHPCO and NAHC. NHPCO also released its annual facts and figures data report in December, which got a little bit of coverage, but anybody listening should know that facts and figures is an essential tool for anyone doing hospice sales, community outreach, hospice referral source education, and hospice media relations. It's just a tremendous tool that the NHPCO has been producing digitally for about 20 years now, and I can't remember how far back the print-only editions go. They certainly go back to the early 90s. Next category was end-of-life care and palliative care news with 26 articles. Again, light for the month. We continue to see coverage of palliative care research studies seeping into some general and trade media coverage, which is always nice to see. Death doulas scored another handful of articles in December, and the Center to Advance Palliative Care commemorated its 20th anniversary in December and got a little coverage for that as well. Of the 23 articles about hospitals that I ran in December in Hospice News Today, 15 of them were about operating losses, layoffs, lowered bond ratings, and similar bad news for the hospital sector. One not-for-profit hospital that was required to report its financials did announce an improved bottom line year over year. That was the exception. I'm sure leaders of the hospital sector are grateful for the bad news that skilled nursing, assisted living, and home health are generating regularly to take some of the heat off the hospital sector. Tied for 10th place with 22 articles last month were medical aid and dying and home health and private duty, as I mentioned. The focus of medical aid and dying coverage began its logical shift from emphasizing personal stories about people seeking medical aid and dying to more stories that are aimed at teeing up the issue for 2024 legislative sessions in a number of states that have been struggling with the issue in recent years. A state legislator introduced Indiana's first medical aid in dying legislation. The news coverage noted that that legislation wasn't going anywhere in that state's Republican-dominated legislature, but the legislator positioned this as a starting a lengthy dialogue in this state. And at month's end, the New York Times published a moving essay by, of all things, a Washington Post writer who was keeping a promise to his sister to chronicle her journey to a medical aid in dying death in New Jersey earlier in 2023. And finally, home health and private duty news. While the Washington Post focused on failings in assisted living and nursing homes in December, the New York Times looked at the high cost of home care in its own investigation, which was headlined "Desperate Families Search for Affordable Home Care." Not a great headline for the home health sector. Much of the rest of the coverage of home health care wasn't good either, but at least there were half as many articles generated by home health as skilled nursing and assisted living did. So at least in total, there was less negative coverage for the home health sector. Honorable mentions were not particularly noteworthy in December. The five categories that I would list are physician and nursing news with 17 articles with the nursing shortage, problems and solutions dominating the coverage. Medical Marijuana News had 13 articles with ongoing implementation problems and hassles in Republican states that really don't want it, but the voters passed it, dominating the coverage. Then there was news about for-profit providers, 13 articles, Volunteer News with 11 articles, and Wish and Dream Fulfillment Stories with 11 articles. Just also worth mentioning, there were three other categories that didn't quite get that many hits, but I think are worth mentioning. Dementia care in the hospice sector continued to see a reasonable amount of coverage, 8 articles total. In December, private equity in healthcare, not just hospice, but in healthcare, took some big hits in December with headlines like these: private equity, the metastasizing disease threatening healthcare. Senators probe private equity hospital deals following CBS News investigation. And serious medical errors rose after private equity firms bought hospitals. And to prove that the for-profit sector is not the only cause of the broader healthcare sector's public image problems, I'll conclude with this headline from the New York Times from the beginning of the month: Why are nonprofit hospitals focused more on dollars than patients?
Yeah.
So with the holidays, it wasn't exactly the happiest of times for healthcare coverage in December. We got off in the hospice sector relatively pain-free.
You know, it's interesting listening to that, Mark, and I think of the podcast that I did with Carol Fisher and Bill Keen about a study that MPHI had, and a pearl that jumped out at me is that the reputation of healthcare has turned. Like you know, especially with your interesting purview, looking through the rearview mirror of your career, I mean, generally compared to like lawyers and other industries or professions, healthcare has always been pretty good. Unfortunately, you know, COVID really did polarize our country, but it also tainted healthcare out of that, and which is why I think it's so alarming in what you're just saying. We may sit there as hospice people and go, well, you know, glad I'm not nursing home, but yet it kind of paints the broad healthcare spectrum. And I know when I first came into hospice in the mid-90s, a bit of a mantra was, hey, the customer needs to understand we are part of healthcare. And you know how hard that has been of, hey, look at hospice. It is part of the establishment of healthcare. So you work your ass off of painting yourself in light. And then all of a sudden the game has changed because healthcare is not looked at overall positively. And then you have this barrage of articles in these certain segments that are going more negative. So I don't know if you have a comment to that, but I find that alarming from that perspective.
I think so. You know, we, for the longest time, we separated ourselves from the healthcare sector. But with the flip in ownership and the rise in the number of providers, so that hospice is now dominated by for-profit providers, we don't have that insulation anymore, if you will. So we do get tainted by that.
Well, thank you, Mark. That's the last time we'll do that quantitative analysis the way you did it. We'll talk about that a little bit towards the end of the podcast. So I'll do my perspective now, and I actually want to pause as I go through my sections. What I love about what we've done now, especially a full year of this together, is I'm starting to see a taxonomy, a framework of common themes as a C-suite leader. And it's so interesting. I did not think about the correlation until the holidays. I always take a lot of time to reflect. There's a totally different project I've been working on. We have this fascinating framework that we do a 360 external environmental scan to then inform a strategic plan. Because if you're going to do a strategic plan, right, you want to know what you're actually going to encounter on the journey. I see a corollary between what we've actually noticed in that in these categories that actually have emerged in these articles. And so I'm going to use the confluence of those two in my framework starting when we do the top news stories of January. So this is almost kind of like a bridge categorization, if you will. But the one I definitely want to keep going forward is I'll just call it the mission moment category. And Jimmy Carter has been such a blessing. And then just the heartbreaking aspect of his wife to come under hospice and pass away before he does. So several articles about Rosalind Carter and especially her impact on caregivers and just giving kudos. Mark, can you speak to that at all? Because honestly, I did not know about a lot of her work related to caregivers and bringing just illumination to the burden and the journey and the hard work of caregivers. And so is there any wisdom or just perspective you have on that? Like, do you know where that came from or?
Well, it, I think the germ of an idea about that goes back to her days as Jimmy's partner in Southwest Georgia and being in a small community and her mother-in-law having been a traveling nurse and seeing people in their home and seeing families, you know, struggling to take care of loved ones in a rural area that didn't have a lot of healthcare assets. And then when she was on the road campaigning, both in 75, 76, and then again in 1980, she met a lot of people. You know, she was doing grassroots events, meeting people in small groups and hearing their stories. And she heard a lot of stories about caregivers, and her work with mental health in the White House had some impact on that. And, you know, I think one of the most significant things about her work in caregiving is when she decided that she was going to do something about it, she actually domiciled her caregiving institute at what had been a small community college in Americus, Georgia, Georgia Southwestern College. They now go by Georgia Southwestern University. And the Caregiver Institute is really one of the flagship programs at Georgia Southwestern University. And that's thanks to Mrs. Carter. They've published a lot of reports, have a depth and breadth of information for people on their website. They've sponsored research. They've presented symposia and has really, the Institute with Rosalind as the flag bearer really elevated that issue for a lot of people.
And that's great.
It's great legacy, and it's really nice to see with her passing that people have focused on that and have given it another boost.
Yeah, thanks for that perspective. So, and I should have said before we jumped in, Mark, so I flagged 95 total articles. So this mission moment category was about 12, of which almost half of those were either about Jimmy, President Carter, or his wife, Rosalind. So thanks for that perspective. Mm-hmm. So there's one I included that you're going to laugh about. And it actually ended up being a mistake because, you know, it's amazing you've done what you've done with the Hospice News today. But it was about the Reuters hospice care does not hasten death. I believe that was the right one, right? Mm-hmm. And that article got passed around. I saw these emails going back and forth, and I didn't pay attention to the date either. And so you want to tell the quick funny on that, how that article got included?
Yeah, it showed up. I don't know why, but it showed up in a bunch of Google alerts and other alerts. And it was one of those days where I was just swamped, and it had a contemporary date on it, but when you click through to the article, it actually had like the 2003 date on it. And I had a couple of people the next morning after I published it say, is there something new here? Because when I click on this, it takes me to the old study. No, that was my error. And I owned up to it with an apology in the next day's newsletter. But, you know, it's interesting. Reuters has periodically been, you know, every couple of weeks I see an old article that's 10, 20 years old that somehow pops up in Google alerts. I'm not quite sure why or how, but I just missed that one.
Well, I wanted you to affirm you though, actually, because there was some great discussion, you know, hospice care does not hasten death, and then like using the article in a positive way. So, you know, Mark, even when you would very rarely make any mistake, I wanted to let you know, I saw it getting passed and forth between some leaders in a very good way, and got in the hand of some hospice community education people. So, you know, something cool came out of that. Of course, there was a Time article as well about the language of hospice can help us get better at discussing death. So I included that under a mission moment. There was an NPR news story about what is hospice care, 6 myths about this end-of-life option. And of course, Anderson Cooper, as he's gone on his own grief journey, has really started to, use his own personal experience to bring to light grief. You know, as Americans, we just suck. It's not in our culture like it is in many other longstanding cultures. You know, Americans are more about pour yourself up by the bootstraps. Kudos on Anderson Cooper. So they had some great articles about that. There's a Newsweek article about caregivers are invisible and they shouldn't be. A USA Today, tears streaming down my face. The new Chevy commercial hits home with Americans. You and I talked about that last month. And so just that amazing, if you've not seen that commercial, go on any social media platform and the Chevy commercial about the Alzheimer's patient is a tearjerker, absolute tearjerker. And what a great way to start the holidays.
Just make sure you catch the 5-minute version, not the 30-second or 60-second version that's running on commercial TV right now. The original commercial was 5 minutes and like 20 seconds. The shorter version is still great. It's still moving. It's not the complete story. It's just if you really want to get the tearjerker moment, you have to watch the 5-minute, 20-second version.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad. I had not seen that shorter version. So it makes me wonder if it'll be one of the Super Bowl commercials coming up in February, because it's just gotten so much good feedback. So that was my mission moment category, Mark. So my next category, which is just going to be a staple or as long as we do the show together, which is just the staffing or workforce challenges. And I've started to substratify those into three subcategories. One is articles that basically paint the picture of the issue. The second is, what are the implications of the issue? And then the third category, which I love, is, and here are solutions to the challenge. And the great thing that I can see in the rearview mirror as we look back over all of 2023 is that number of articles that are going towards solutions are actually getting greater by the month. So that to me is a positive sign. So on the challenging ones, Connecticut's nursing shortage is all about pay rates. Home health providers are squeezing turnips, competing for clinical staff, which to me is what's going to happen throughout all of healthcare as the baby boomer silver tsunami continues to hit. Next one, a modern healthcare article, healthcare organizations hiring, retaining more employees. And then the next one is a New York Times, why doctors and pharmacists are in revolt. And then a home healthcare news, California officially raises the minimum wage for home healthcare workers. So now we're kind of getting into the implications. A McKnight's article, greener nurses enter field as workforce demands continue to spike. Of course, a concerning article about where I live in Western North Carolina, a plain old greed was the title. HCA nurses rallied to denounce understaffing and unsafe conditions at HCA Hospital in Asheville, North Carolina. Providence, St. Vincent doctors vote to unionize, hospitals vow good faith bargaining. Senior living, new bill would overhaul nation's workforce training and development system. So to me, an implication is we got to start to do something at a national level. One out of Florida, Tampa Bay Times, a nursing reboot. Jobs are on the rise in Florida in the nursing sector. Beck's article, hospital review, Ascension nurses begin strikes. Again, I've never seen the number of strikes, and I think that's an implication as you're getting the scarce resource of staff, and the need is getting broader and broader. That's creating a lot of striking and unionization. Washington Post, a broken immigration system keeps workers out of jobs in the U.S. that the U.S. needs to fill. And then now going into the solution articles, creative role development, organizational culture are the keys to battling 2024 staffing headwinds. Wholeheartedly agree with that. Hospice clinician wages are rising at a slower rate and turnover is falling. And I think that's maybe a sign that people are realizing hospice is a great place in healthcare and is certainly challenging, but the headwinds in being in nursing homes and hospitals are almost untenable in some cases. And people are realizing, I think, that hospice is a great career choice in healthcare.
Thank you to our TCN Talks sponsor, DeltaCareRx. DeltaCareRx is also the title sponsor for our May and November 2023 Leadership Immersion courses. DeltaCareRx is primarily known as a national hospice, PBM, and prescription mail order company. DeltaCareRx is a premier vendor of TCN and provides not only pharmaceutical care, but also niche software innovations that save their customers time, stress, and money. Thank you, DeltaCareRx, for all the great work you do in end-of-life and serious illness care.
they want to work and they're a potential untapped. You know, hopefully, Mark, they're going to be like you and not go, you know what, I just want to go spend my life on the golf course. You have so much wisdom to add. And so we're keeping you engaged. And there are going to be a lot of other baby boomers that hopefully we figure out how to keep them engaged. McKnight, salary increases, bonuses help to address the nursing shortage challenges. Another McKnight's, nursing home, palliative care, hospice care provides CNAs new opportunities. Modern healthcare. What healthcare systems did this year to recruit and retain workers? There's some great pearls in that modern healthcare article. Another modern healthcare. Nurses are seeking work in the U.S. on the rise despite the visa pause. And then the last one in this category, Summit County Nursing Homes testing robots. Yes, I said testing robots to address staff shortages. I predict that you're going to see more and more of that. When you can't produce enough bodies and there's an overwhelming need, how do you maintain that high touch and still integrate technology? Now, my next category, Mark, you called out, and I break it separately, but it is absolutely related to the workforce shortage. But the whole nursing home, there's seven articles, but the gist of it is the fact that the mandate of staffing for nursing homes, industry is not compliant with it. And then you've got, there was an article about Senator Fetterman, I believe, and others are kind of getting behind that they just need to do away with it. And the reason why I wanted to call it out, there's nothing easy in Washington, D.C. There's nothing easy for these people that are so polarized to agree on anything. Okay, so you get them to agree on a staffing mandate. Well, damn it, we did something. We have mandated staffing. Okay. Are you going to mandate that people have more babies that go into healthcare and you give them you give them scholarships? Because just mandating it doesn't fix the demographic challenge of this overwhelming need, and there's just not enough people to go around. And then the high points of the volume are still in our future. And so that's just one reason why I want to call that out, because I think that, and there are some smart voices. Dr. Bayak has a great podcast. He and I coming out after yours and mine, Mark. And he talks about staffing ratios. And so he's more talking about more being self-imposed as a way to differentiate maybe good quality providers versus that aren't. But just kind of mandating from on high is not a panacea. I don't know if you have a comment about that, but that's one reason why I kind of segment those articles each month.
Well, the interesting juxtaposition here is the Washington Post article you mentioned in the previous segment about the modern healthcare article about the problems with the visa system, that the administration has been proposing solutions and the Republican House members are too busy going to the border in Texas and doing media events as opposed to passing any immigration legislation that would give the Biden administration a win. So you have hospitals that are spending money to recruit nurses overseas and waiting 2, 3, 4 years to have those nurses actually show up because the visa system is broken and Congress will not give the administration the tools to fix. The Republicans in the Congress will not give the Democratic administration the tools to fix it. And when the Republicans had all three branches of government, Senate, House, all three legislative and administrative, the White House, the Senate, and the House, they didn't do anything about it from 2017 to 2019. And that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, I've been in hospitals. I've seen, you know, just waves of nurses from the Philippines, from the Caribbean, from Europe, from Ireland. And, you know, America is a great place for skilled nurses to come practice. Sometimes they stay here for a long time. Sometimes, you know, we saw in Miami nurses would come work their butts off for 7 years, save a ton of money, and go home to the islands and live like queens. Based on what they'd saved. And they would encourage their friends to come. So, the immigration
thing. It's going to have to be part of the solution.
Yeah. And only half of what, only one political party wants to address that solution at this point.
Well, I always try to stay apolitical. One of my mentors who hired me. And so the end of the day is, I know in an organization, and when people take sides on an issue or play games, that's not how you fix an issue. And so I think that quite often, I think end-of-life care, we should be something that brings people together. And this is an issue to say, put your partisan things aside. this is a solution that makes sense. So what's the devils in the details here that we need to work through, because it's going to have to be part of the solution, because we can't put robots by the bedside. Well, that's all you're going to be left with in certain segments of healthcare, maybe nursing facilities, et cetera, because there just won't be enough people. Thank you for commentary on that one. So going into my next category is on implications on reimbursement is what I'll call this category, especially going forward into 2024. So fraud and abuse healthcare, government expects to recover more than $3 billion from healthcare fraud. So that just tells you there are going to be more audits, et cetera. Home Care Daily, hospice 36-month rule workaround, not worth the risk, financial experts warn. So the 36-month rule is going to be interesting to see what happens with mergers, acquisitions, and things like that in the home health and hospice segment. And then Bill Dombey article, history repeating itself on hospice program integrity, and him talking about what they saw on the home health side. And then hospice news, how the hospice care index can help shape an operator's future. So I include all those because all those have implications on future reimbursement. My next category is a fun category and probably had more articles this month. I'll call it kind of demographic future trends, emerging trends that you need to be aware of as a C-suite leader. So caregiving, next avenue, lessons in caregiving. So we know caregiving is going to be huge as the silver tsunami of baby boomers. A public news service survey finds rampant discrimination in healthcare. So you think about our healthcare challenge. And if that's a perception out there about rampant discrimination in healthcare. Here's an interesting one. Funerals are more expensive than last year. And you see a lot of interesting, what I'll call maybe innovation coming to the whole funeral industry, probably because of that. Racial and ethnic disparity seen in the use of hospice. That's nothing new, but that's something that we're going to have to get better at going forward in the future. And it still continues to be a trend. Home health news analysis shows how unaffordable home care is becoming for American seniors. Joan Tino did a fascinating presentation about that at an MPHI meeting I was at last year about, you know, not there's only a smaller percentage of baby boomers that have amazing wealth, and the middle and what the middle is going to have to do about housing is a really concerning trend. Mark, this is one you continue to bring to my just awareness. Kansas unrivaled rural hospital crisis, 58% at risk of closing, 58%. 82% lost money on patient care. That's a pretty alarming trend. Proportion of home care users declines, NHPCO report finds. Study uncovers racial inequalities in hospice utilization and length of stay. Models can predict when older adults with dementia may need nursing homes. There's just a lot of these. I just found interesting trends this month. Caregivers are more financially burdened, less prepared for large emergency expenses. This is maybe more of a positive trend, but how broadband expansion is bolstering rural healthcare, that's going to be critical if we can get some grant funding and things like that, because there are not going to be enough people. And even more exacerbated in rural areas. So technology is going to be a way, maybe you could take an amazing expert in a more metropolitan area and be able to telehealth, bring them into a rural community. Hospitals are mulling clinically integrated networks. In fact, we're going to do a whole show on that in 2024 about clinically integrated networks and what that is. But rural hospitals are banding together in clinically integrated networks. Affordable home care. People are dying broke. Desperate families search for affordable home care because dying broke. Heed History's warning on aid in dying. That was a Star Tribune article. Washington Post investigation on elopements puts memory care in the spotlight. That's the one that you pointed out, Mark. This one to me is alarming because there's just so many bad articles of challenges right now in nursing home. A nursing home in St. Louis closes suddenly, forcing out 170 residents with really no pre-notice. So that to me is an alarming trend. America long-term financing system is broke. And this was a Hill article about a fix needed now. A Wall Street Journal article, good news on life expectancy. It's still going up. And then maybe kind of on the backside of that is they had several articles about how overall life expectancy went down because of COVID. But then once they kind of parse out the actual detail, you almost have to extrapolate out the COVID deaths and, you know, where will that end up kind of going forward? So let's see. I don't think there's so many others, but they're more kind of along these trends. So my next category, Mark, is innovation category. Those are fun. There were less articles this month in that category, but Chatty Robot helps seniors fight loneliness through artificial intelligence companionship. And I think we're going to see more of that. Best Buy Modern Healthcare. So Best Buy to expand healthcare offerings with new partner. CVS McKnight's article. CVS to start rebranding its healthcare services segment this year. Victory in Home Care. House passes the Elizabeth Dole Home Care Act. And there's some interesting things in there that could actually fuel future innovation in the home. Which article in Modern Healthcare, now is the time for a hospital at home. So I think the storyline under these innovations is we're going to see more and more healthcare in the home. There's no doubt about that. That is the future. And if there's any positive that came out of COVID, it's that. Next category is Medicare Advantage. There's a little bit less articles this month about them. Most of them actually not good. Shifting focus to Medicare Advantage will alter life as we know it. That was a McKnight's article. Wall Street Journal, the Medicare gold rush is slowing down. An interesting article about the Oklahomian. Here's why you can't die peacefully in Oklahoma. And it was kind of talking about maybe the not so positive impacts as you see more and more Medicare Advantage as a larger percentage of Medicare offerings. Medicare Advantage plans, this was a Modern Healthcare article, Medicare Advantage plans are crippling rural hospitals. And then an article about United Healthcare in Modern Healthcare, United Healthcare hit with a Medicare Advantage marketing complaint. So that was my M&A articles. And then my next category is mergers and acquisition. I'll call out just a few of these. Changing consolidation rules could affect hospice mega deals. So that was about the 36-month new rule. Hospital merger activity is probably going to increase in 2024. That was a Modern Healthcare article. General Healthcare, FTC, Department of Justice finalized merger guidelines that could impede healthcare M&A. So kind of two sides of the coin here. There is a most impactful deals of 2023. And then some of these you called out, Mark, the ones in California, By the Bay Health, Mission Health, and Hope to complete a triple merger in California. And then why hospice M&A could rebound in 2024. And then Hospital Jefferson and Lehigh Valley Healthcare to merge in 2024. And then just one that I think you and I are going to kind of watch. The title is Walmart reportedly interested in reviving Humana deal talks. Could you imagine Humana and Walmart coming together? Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to talk about that next year. And I kind of put this under merger and acquisition, but NHPCO and NOC have announced their transition board of directors as they become one national association. And I think that's kind of all I'm going to call out on that one, Mark. And then the last category, I'm going to do this next year. I'll call it my general category, but categories are things that I want to kind of call out. So it's almost like a catch-all, if it will. But the first is just the continual alarming issues with pharmacies. You and I actually talked about this, I think about 60 days ago, I think it was October, news stories of the month, but several articles. CVS pharmacies accused of staffing-related problems. United Healthcare and Optum are sued by independent pharmacy over unconscionable fees. New York Times, America is having yet another drug shortage. Here's why it keeps happening. Pharmacy Culpepper Store, it will put us out of business. Pharmacist fights corporate fees. So just a lot of articles. And I think that in some respects, pharmacies are kind of the canary in the coal mine. There's multiple factors. You and I talked about that again, Mark, about 60 days ago. These fees that the PBMs, I forget what the acronym is, maybe it's DINR fees, but I think it was a 40,000% increase that these local pharmacies are dealing with via these PBMs, and it's just squeezing them out of business. You could say it's the corollary is maybe the Medicare Advantage carve-in for a lot of the rest of us in healthcare, certainly in the hospice and palliative care segment. So I just want to call that out. I find that pretty alarming. Maybe we'll do a show just on that because each month I'm seeing a a volume of those type of articles. Interestingly, our local TV station, West North Carolina, there's a local pharmacy that literally just from one night, local pharmacy put signs up, we're being bought out by Walgreens, and the community just going, this is horrible. And the pharmacist is like, I've got no other option. And then this next category is, the top 10 home healthcare news stories of 2023. And they were all basically about like mergers, acquisitions. It just tells you, because home health is further down what I would call the maturity cycle. And it, you'd almost say what's happening to them is like the future of hospice. And so that's why I called that one out. A modern healthcare article, why healthcare systems are dropping their IT tech teams. And they're not only outsourcing them, they are offshoring them. So these tech teams are being in offshore places like India, et cetera. So really fascinating article. New York Times article, why are nonprofit hospitals focused more on the dollars than the patients? And Mark, you called that one out. That was a really interesting article. I don't know if you want to make additional comments on that one, but there's just a lot of pearls to me and why I wanted to call that one out.
Yeah, Senator Charles Grassley, when he was the ranking minority member of the Senate Finance Committee under Chairman Max Baucus of Montana in around 2005-ish, he started to look at this issue of whether the largest not-for-profit hospitals are good guys or bad guys. And he initially went after the top 20. And this issue has been percolating for almost 20 years now. And a lot of people in the post-acute sector think, well, that's hospitals. It'll never filter down to the hospice sector. And I'm not quite so sure about that. I mean, we've seen some tax issues, some local property tax issues where it has filtered down. So it's always worth keeping an eye on. And that New York Times story was not good news for the not-for-profit healthcare sector anywhere.
Yep. Thank you, Mark. Well, and the last one that I just wanted to call out, my dear friend, Carol Fisher, who's president of MPHI. And so there's a great article. The title was Trauma-Informed, Hospice News Awareness, Education Keys to Trauma-Informed Hospice Care. Carol had one of the top-rated podcasts in the United States and the UK called The Girlfriends that really brought to light domestic abuse. And as Carol is, and it's almost been like almost an accident of, you know, Carol being part of this. Be a spoiler. If you have not heard The Girlfriends, go to that podcast. Fascinating story about something that happened in Carol's personal life. But from that is brought this great awareness about domestic abuse. And of course, Carol having this amazing background in hospice and palliative care, effectively this article is kind of pairing the two. And here's kind of the premise. A lot of our staff, because there are a lot of females, may be dealing with some level of domestic abuse. And are we aware of that and what type of trauma that brings into the workplace? But also the patients that we're actually caring for, many of them have had some level of trauma in their life. And so I think it's bringing a really interesting awareness. And I think of my podcast with Quint Studer this past year, and Quint said, look, mental and emotional health tools in your toolbox are no longer soft skills. They're essential skills for leaders. So for us to be aware of, my staff have gone through something, how's that impacting how they show up and how they navigate their life, but also the patients and families we serve. So I think that article is an interesting beachhead that may create a really good and positive outcome as far as our workforce, as well as for the patients and families that we serve. So I just want to call that one out. So, man, that was a lot to talk about this month, Mark. And so this is the last time. So Mark, just real quick, just tell our listeners, you have now transitioned Hospice News Today to Hospice and Palliative Care Today newsletter with Court and his team. Just maybe a quick summary on that. And that I'll kind of give our listeners a preview of how you and I are going to do this show going forward for 2024.
Okay. I've been publishing Hospice News Today in its original form going back to October of 2012. And I just reached a point where the 4 a.m. wake-ups were just a bit too much. So I told my readers a year ago, actually, that I would be ceasing publication on December 31. And a couple of hospice entrepreneurs, Court Kastner from Hospice Analytics, and Joy Berger, who had a long career at Hospice, but most recently is known for her grief and bereavement work at a company she founded called Composing Life. They stepped forward to continue publishing a daily hospice news briefing. They call it Hospice and Palliative Care Today. They're using a slightly different model than I did. I was a subscription model. They're using an advertising model with free subscription, so anybody can go to their website and sign up and receive the 6 a.m. email every day. And they're off to a great start. They started January 1. They're learning as they go along. It's a fun journey to watch.
That's great, Mark. And first off, I gave you kudos last time, but I'm going to give you kudos again. I mean, the service, first off, the personal sacrifice. I mean, how many people would wake up that early to create this amazing executive brief to hospice leaders that this is news you need to be aware of? And then I got the idea last Christmas, well, let's at least make sure that they, if they're not paying attention, at least they have one venue to say, these are the ones you damn well should not have missed. Mm-hmm. So you could make sure you've got the intel to do your job. But just the personal sacrifice, the amazing expertise, years of experience that you've brought, I just want to personally thank you again.
Thank you.
I remember when you told me, like, hey, I'm giving you a heads up, I'm going to be putting this out that I'm going to be retiring a year from now. I'm like, no! but I love, and it's all ended up great. I love the direction that Court and Joy are taking it. We got to play a small part in that. And so I think there's some great stuff. So you and I next year are going to, you're not going to have to be waking up, and we're going to do a little bit less of the quantity. Although the cool way that Court's doing it, we may have some interesting stats that we could bring mm-hmm. to the table. But one thing, Mark, I'd like us to bring, one of the things I was listening to as I was starting my holiday vacation, everyone, the different talking heads, different podcasts. Well, here's my predictions for next year. I'd love for you and I to do, here's the top trends that we think we're going to see in next year. And I think that'll give you and I an interesting almost categorization for then the ones that we'll discuss throughout the month of, hey, here's the top news story still that we hope you didn't miss. So you and I will be prepared for that. And that'll be a little bit of a teaser for what we'll be releasing in the top of February. So Mark, I wanted to end with your masterclass this time. And man, you had a really cool, in your very last hospice news today, you start to do a little bit of masterclass, and one that it's actually how I got to know you. I think I was on a call in Drew with DeltaCare, Drew Maholio, and I think I said hospice industry. And he goes, yeah, buddy, you better not say that for a Mark Cohen. And I first time I asked you, and you did a beautiful job in your hospice news today. So I wanted you to do a master class. Why should people not basically say the hospice industry?
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Chris. It's one of the issues that's been on my radar screen since I first joined the hospice community in 1996. Lots of people, both in the for-profit world, the not-for-profit world, the public policy arena, the media, use the term, and they probably do that without giving it a second thought. But to me, referring to hospice as an industry runs counter to the positive image the hospice community has sought to build and nurture over close to 50 years. My passion on this issue stems from my days doing hospital public relations and communications in the early and the mid-1990s. It reflects the results of a national 3-year survey research project that was conducted by the American Hospital Association. The results of that 33-state project told hospital leaders that the little square blue sign with the white H on highways all across America was a powerful symbol, actually, that spoke of the care and compassion consumers saw in their local hospital. The survey results also said that the most trusted person in healthcare was a nurse, not a doctor. That was the first time that had come up in survey research. Subsequent surveys by people like Gallup have confirmed that. The research said that at a time when hospitals were running pell-mell to rebrand themselves as systems, consumers were telling survey researchers that they absolutely, positively did not want to receive care from a healthcare system. As a result of results like these, the American Hospital Association concluded from this 3-year project that it was just plain bad, stupid, and counterproductive for hospital leaders to talk about a hospital industry. And the edict went out to every hospital leader and to every hospital communicator to no longer refer to a hospital industry, but to refer to the hospital field or sector. And the irony is that at about the same time, the powers that be in the hospice world stopped talking about a hospice community and the hospice movement, and instead began talking about a hospice industry. And why was that? You know, one theory could be that it was the early incursion of the then relatively small number of for-profit providers into the hospice arena. Perhaps. I think it was more a function of the fact that the leaders of the hospice movement had become weary of being seated at the children's table in Washington when it came time to divvy up the Medicare pie. And some thought that by elevating hospice to the status of an industry, they could grab a seat at the grown-ups table. But regardless of the reasons why people started referring to hospice as an industry, there are a lot of reasons why people in every corner of the hospice community should hate the term hospice industry. Here are three reasons. At a time when not-for-profit hospices are desperately trying to differentiate themselves from for-profit hospice competitors, why would a not-for-profit provider want to utilize terminology that is generally associated with the for-profit sector? And at the same time, at a time when for-profit hospices are keen to fuzz the differences between for-profit and not-for-profit hospices, why would a for-profit provider want to utilize terminology that underscores the notion of for-profit hospice care? And a third example, skilled nursing calls itself an industry. And is that the standard to which we want to hold hospice? My opinion, I think not. Finally, I always ask my consulting clients to try this experiment. Imagine you're in a consumer focus group and the moderator asks, what's the first word that comes to mind when you hear the word industry? You know, what do you think the responses will be? Autos, energy, steel, transportation, high tech. If you're in the South, perhaps some will offer textiles or rugs or furniture. If you're on the coast, perhaps some will say fisheries and seafood. If you're in the Midwest and Great Plains, you might hear agriculture, livestock, meatpacking. In many areas, such as Asheville, where you are, you'll probably also hear tourism. But hospice, I can't imagine anybody who would sit in that focus group and say hospice when they're asked to think of what's the first word that comes to mind when you hear the word industry? We started out as a hospice movement, and we evolved to become a hospice community. When speaking of the business side, we can call ourselves the hospice sector or the hospice field. Hard stop, at least for me. And that's exactly what I counsel my communications clients. We are not and never should be a hospice industry.
Well, you know, and upon reflection, even, you know, turning the mirror on myself, my mentor, Dr. Lee Thayer, Mark, you've heard me talk about him. He was huge on lexicon. Like, we create our existence in the words that we use. I'll just say I was intellectually lazy. Like, mm-hmm. You know, but what word do I grasp to kind of paint the picture of all of us doing this work? And I want to applaud you because at first I was kind of like, what the hell's this deal? Why is he? But once I understood I'm like, you know what? That's so right. Because this came about much different than other things. It was a movement. It was a societal social movement, Kubler-Ross and others. And to call it an industry is almost an insult, especially those of us who spend so much of our lives in it.
When you hear the word industry, you think of producing something, manufacturing something. Yes. The only thing hospice manufactures are audits. Fraud and abuse audits.
Yes, I agree with you. We create amazing life stories, amazing opportunities for families to heal, amazing outcomes in the last days and months of life. And when you use that word industry, it's like one of these is not like the other. Mm-hmm. And so, and I personally, as you poked on me, I love the term field and segment. I think I've leaned more on segment, but as I've heard you do your master class, I'm leaning more towards field. I actually, especially after spending time with Dr. Bayak, who his podcast will come out the next one. But I mean, either one. And I've also tried to lean not so much on, well, we're a nonprofit provider. No, we're a community-owned, mission-focused organization. Mm-hmm. Because tech status doesn't mean a whole bunch to the people that you're trying to tell that story to.
Absolutely.
So kudos, Mark. Once again, you know, sometimes you're, well, is he just being cantankerous? No, actually, there's a lot of wisdom behind why he's poking on that. So I appreciate, they're always, I've hung with you long enough to go, there's a method to his madness here in a very good way.
Well, thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Chris. This was fun.
I'm looking forward to our pivot in a good way.
Yeah.
And now that you're so well rested, although I messaged Mark and said, so did you like sleep till 12 o'clock the first day after? He goes, no, I was up at 6 o'clock working out. I think that says a lot about you. So Mark actually picked this one. I thought it's perfect, especially on the end of this masterclass. It's from Sister Irene Krause, who is the CEO of the Daughters of Charity Health System in St. Louis, Missouri. No margin, no mission means that even the most dedicated, mission-driven nonprofit healthcare provider must act like a for-profit business and earn an excess of revenue over expenses year over year, or else it will go out of business and lose forever its ability to meet its mission and serve its community. Thanks for listening to TCN Talks.